Hello, hello. Welcome to Transistor Radio, where we have a chip chat with the fine fellows of Doug from Fabricated Knowledge and John from Asianometry, and your host, as always, Dylan from Semi-Analysis.
Welcome back.
Yeah, we're recording this in unusual circumstances, but you know, we're here now because there are big things going on in chips.
There's always, this is the problem, man. There's always big things going on in chips. So,
wait, so right now, you know, now that I think about it, not just one of us are homeless, but actually two of us are homeless.
That is right.
Is that fair? Is that a fair statement, John?
That is correct. Absolutely.
And also, John, I hear your employment status has recently changed as well.
That is true. That is true. I'm now unemployed.
Right. Wow. Yeah. You know what that means? That means you should subscribe to the whatchamacallit, the Patreon today.
Oh my God.
But realistically, we're going to do it at the beginning instead of the end. But realistically, John, what are you up to? Where are you going? Because this actually might be a good time to tell the fans, the peeps, where you're up to, what you're doing, because the readership on this is pretty niche. So what's the plans?
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy trip. I'm flying to Japan for about a week. Then I'll be in Silicon Valley from the 9th to the 12th, or 13th, and then New York City for about a week, and then be in either Maine or Los Angeles, and then fly back to Taiwan in March. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be a wild sort of road around. Yeah, if anyone's interested, I already posted.
And are there going to be?
Yeah, there's going to be meetups. There's a meetup in Japan. Okay. And I think I have a meetup in New York City with Jordan Schneider of China Talk. So we're going to just hang out a bit. A little nervous about that, but I think it's going to be fine. And it's going to be great. You'll get to meet. If you want to come out, check out my YouTube discussion page and post and just sign up. Go say hi.
And if you have a very swanky office, because I did promise John that I'd ask a couple of hedge funds if John could just work there for a day, right? You know, not really like do anything, but just work on his own, like in a little conference room or whatever. If anyone has a swanky office and is willing to host John, I'm sure he'll talk to you a bit, although he will try to work, so it'll be unobtrusive. That'd be awesome. So I'll reach out to some people for you, John, but open invite here on the podcast.
This is one way to reach out to a lot of people really quickly, right?
Well, not that many people. Exactly. But, yeah, so some people.
Hey! There's tens of loyal listeners.
I think it's hundreds.
I'm joking because I love to say there's dozens of us. That's like my favorite meme. Okay, let's actually get back to the semiconductors, guys. Before we do anything else, but yeah, you should go to the meetup. What are we going to talk about this week? There's a lot of things we can talk about. I think we can probably talk about earnings since we're kind of mid swing right now. The thing I think is most interesting is that Dylan got called out on the ASML call. And Dylan, you want to talk about that, or should I take?
Why don't you just tee it up because it makes my ego feel better, bigger,
okay,
bigger,
so
even bigger.
So, oh my God. Okay, so one, we need a deflator on that. There needs to be a Moore's law. You know, we need process shrink for Dylan's ego. Otherwise, he'll get out of control. But importantly, so ASML. Good print. Bookings was extremely high, mostly driven by EUV. But on the call, after they, you know, talked about like China revenue, EUV, blah, 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 memory, stuff like that. We can talk about that in depth. They also called out Dylan. Someone called Dylan, one of the sell side analysts, I can't remember who, is like, there's some bloggers out there, people who talk a lot, who said that high NA is not economical, which is all true. These are all truth statements. ASML obviously spent a lot of the call kind of refuting that. They're saying like, well, no, high NA is, and that's the reason why our customers are doing it, or our customers are going to freaking figure that out, or our cost competitive versus double patterning is better. But more than anything, we love to hear that ASML CEO and CFO, and probably the entire senior management team, has read Dylan's high NA is not economical. And I don't know. Anything else to add there, Dylan? I mean, you want to go over the post? Yeah.
they went out to this, there's a Paul Van Grieven. He has a great blog called Bits and Chips. And in there they did an interview, right, with the CFO and I think CEO as well. And it was really funny there because they explicitly said, in my view, the semi-analysis report doesn't sufficiently take into account the value of, you know, and blah, 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 blah. So that was pretty cool. But one of the funny things in there was that they said, you know, to find out what, you know, to counter what I said is only one only needs to have a chat with Intel, as in Intel ordering high NA EUV, you know, about 10 machines is a proof point that high NA is great. Meanwhile, TSMC has ordered, where's TSMC's orders, right? So I think that's, it's funny to see that, right? That Intel's being super fast on the high NA, but TSMC is obviously not, and they're using Intel's orders as a refutation point. Meanwhile, last cycle, right, with regular EUV, Intel actually canceled orders, right, or actually switched places in line with people and didn't put in more orders. Meanwhile, Samsung and TSMC were just screaming with the orders. And so it's kind of a flip or a reversal, right? And somehow, you know, that means that high NA is more economical because Intel does it, and you know, let's ignore TSMC's actions.
And actually, let's even talk to that, because you know, you're talking to 18A's greatest Hopium fan. That seems extremely wrong, because even then, let's say they go out for Gate All Around, it's like they're only selling to such a niche part, and they're internally. I don't know. I don't buy it. That's what I'm saying. You'd think TSMC, the most successful foundry in the entire world, has done some math and is like, hey, maybe this sucks. Maybe not sucks, but you know, maybe it's not worth it. The doses problems, blah 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 blah. So I don't know. I think it's really funny because, like, my favorite part is, like, you know, I've been following these stocks for a long time, and you know, there's these theses that come and go, but it's a little different now being almost on the other side, where it's like, hey, you know, read the high NA thing, talk to Dylan. I was like, oh, that's a pretty good point. And then, like, seeing the management teams, like, refute it on the call. My favorite part is sometimes they just don't. And this is kind of a good example, just saying, hey, trust our customers, kind of a bad thesis here, given the fact that Intel is notoriously the worst at executing, and probably the worst at figuring out how much anything costs to make a fab at this point in time. Is that fair?
Yeah. And I don't disagree that it is better at some point, right? And that's sort of what our report says, is that it's better at a certain pitch, which corresponds with sort of the end of the decade, not the point where they have this huge capacity of EUV tools that they're building up towards, which they haven't even gotten orders for. You know, or indications that they need huge volumes of that yet, right? Which is the whole point. But yeah, I think maybe, you know, high NA, they're counting their chickens a bit earlier than they're supposed to hatch, but they will hatch, right? Not saying they won't. Absolutely, yeah. Will hatch. It's just a little earlier. ASML is accounting, like, and telling everyone.
They're kind of saying like 2030 tools, which just seems like insane because it's 2024, right? Like, maybe 20, 30 tools in 28 makes sense.
Yeah, I think they're, like, this... what are they saying? 2026 for 20 tools a year?
Yeah, some. I think it might be 27.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's like the high end of their long term guidance. All I know is, given what we know about that, doesn't make any sense. And as you know, listeners of the podcast, how much the chip costs to make is like kind of the biggest freaking problem right now. I don't think it's like. I mean, it obviously is a challenge to make a smaller chip, but I think the biggest challenge right now is how to make it for the most, for the least money. Is that fair?
Yeah. How to keep reducing the cost of a transistor, right? And that's one thing that people keep arguing. It's dead. It's dead if you have low volumes, but if you have extremely high volumes, cost of transistor still goes down at 5 nanometer, still goes down at 3 nanometer. Intel said it goes down at 18A. TSMC hasn't made a comment yet, I think, but they would probably still say cost goes down per transistor. But again, the volume level just keeps soaring, right? So the question is, like, how can you make it so it's not like, hey, I need 100,000 wafers for it to actually cost less, or better yet, it'll never cost less, right, per transistor. And that's the real battle, and high NA will be implemented exactly when it can continue Moore's law, right? In the economic sense. Even if it's only 10%, 20%, it's still continuing it to some extent. So, you know, that's what's important. Not just, you know, hey, can we make smaller?
I actually was going to ask, because I think you should, everyone has seen the chart of like cost per transistor is going up.
It's
What?
alive.
Yeah, well, okay, I was going to say one of my favorite things ever is all charts in semiconductor land depends, right? There's been this like gate-all-around intensity increase thing that's been going on. It all depends. It's all fake. What circumstance, what tape out, what volume. But my question is, so was that assumption being done on like 10K wafer starts or something like that? And I guess obviously cost per transistor goes down in mega fabs. And so like it pretty much makes sense if it isn't a mega fab, it isn't doing, you know, a or gigafab or whatever, it's not doing, you know, 100K plus wafers in a fab, is it going to cost more always? Is that the right conclusion?
I think that I think it's IBS or whoever who makes it is I don't know
Yeah.
what they're basing it on. They could be basing it on their whole theory that it costs $400 million to make a 7 nanometer chip, which is an absolute lie because I know multiple startups who have taped out with $50 million or less, right? On seven and like $70-80 million on five, right? And these are not just like simple nonsense chips. They have actual IP that even a lot that they licensed and had to pay license fees for, right? All this sort of stuff. And they built their own IP in-house. So it's like, you know, I think they're doing that, like taking that humongous design cost where it takes $400 million, then $700 million, then $1 billion to design a chip, and then dividing it across a minuscule volume, which is like not fair at all, right? And so I think that's what they're doing. Whereas the industry is able to do, you know, the cost to design a chip is still under $100 million, depending on the type of chip, you know, for a full tape out. Now, of course, all your IP teams and how complex the chip affects that a lot, right? And so you can't like get an iPhone chip, right, for $100 million. Of course not, but because it has so much different IP. But you know, the iPhone has so high volume, right? We're talking, you know, 35,000-40,000 wafers a month. That those design costs get absorbed very rapidly, and so you still end up with lower cost per transistor, right? If I go from, you know, 7 nanometer to 5 nanometer, my cost increase in a percentage basis is lower on a per wafer basis, right? Versus your cost increase of versus your transistor increase, right? So it's lower. You get more transistors than you paid for, right? Relatively, right? And the same applies to three, actually, right? It's just three makes it really, really static, right? Like there's almost no gain for the original version of three. But then N3E comes around, right? N3B was worse. N3E comes around and the cost per wafer does go down and the density does not, right? So then you end up with, or barely ticks down, or up, sorry. And so you end up with, you know, hey, cost per transistor reduction is back, right? Which is why everyone's going to N3E and not N3B. You know, of course, the yield issues aside. And two, Intel has already indicated that 18A reduces transistor cost versus their prior nodes, right? TSMC hasn't said it yet, but I bet they will say it. I bet they will be like, yeah, transistor cost is lower. You know, that's just ignoring design cost, right? How many transistors can I get on a wafer? How much does the wafer cost, right? I bet it's lower. And then of course the bar of like, what's the volume required to actually get those cost increase improvements is going to continue to move up, right? Which is why people are moving to, you know, chiplets that span multiple product lines and all these sorts of things.
Is there a possibility that
Yeah, sounds good.
like Intel buys these high-NA EUV devices? They cost more, but they just eat the cost and they just pass like a lower, they just eat some of that, I guess, depreciation cost, and instead of passing it on to their customers.
Right. So the whole point of the report was that like, hey, at 14A, which is the insertion node that Intel is going for, and not the one that TSMC is going for, at least yet, you know, or A14, 14A, depending on who you are, right? That node, the cost difference for the tightest feature, right? You know, call it your M0 metal layers, your contacts, your vias, your V1s, right? Those are where it's how do I say this? The cost difference, right, for that lowest layer is still only in the, you know, 15% range, right? So it's 15% more expensive to use high NA for that feature than it is for regular EUV, right? Now multiply that across, hey, well, there's, you know, a handful of critical features like that where that 15% cost increase is derived, right? You know, and then you go out to, you know, well, what about the features that are on the sort of 2 nanometer level, right? You know, where you're talking about 21 nanometer or 20 nanometer feature sizes, right? What's the cost increase there? It's more closer to, you know, 20%. You kind of go across all of those, and you see that, you know, yes, it's more expensive, but if you've already got the tool, then that's cheaper than buying a new tool, right? And Intel's effectively already got the tool because they placed the order with the Dutch mafia, right? And they're not allowed to cancel that order as far as I know, right? And maybe they have to pay, maybe they can, but pay a huge penalty, but I doubt they would want to do that. And they would already want to keep a few of those for R&D purposes anyways, right? TSMC is of course going to get a few for R&D purposes, but they're not going to really ramp up to like 10 purchases, right? Until they, you know, until they have decided that they're going to use it in a process node, right? On certain critical layers. And that's not at their 2 nanometer and it's not at Intel's 2 nanometer. It's at the 14A for Intel. And we'll see what for TSMC. And so, you know, like, yeah, Intel will eat the cost, right? They've already eaten the cost. They've already decided. They've already shot the gun. Now they just have to deal with their depreciation cost from the EUV tools being higher than that of others who can buy new EUV tools, regular low-NA EUV tools, right, instead of high-NA, and have lower depreciation from them, or reuse existing EUV tools and upgrade them and, you know, pay a much more penalty if they, you know, for example, like TSMC is doing from 5 to 3 nanometer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And actually, I was going to ask, do you want to talk about Intel? Just as a corollary.
Sure, sure. You're go. You wrote a whole piece about this, dude. I've been lazy.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've been on that grind. The dog is within me. Honestly, dude, Intel sucks again. Intel sucks. Well, I mean, Intel still sucks the entire time, but Intel kind of sucks again. More than just them, you know, eating the cost, and that's actually part of the story, because gross margins were really good this quarter and they're like, never mind, next quarter we're gonna have to start doing the ramp again for ramping 18A, 20A and 18A, and so now depreciation expense is starting to rip in again, and margins look like shit again. So Intel, we made it to 18A ish or at least a viewpoint to 18A, but even then we have to remember that they make x86 CPUs, and that's like the single worst business we could ever imagine. And Q1 guide was pretty bad, mostly driven. Now there's some like puts and takes there, is that you could say that part of the reason why Q1 was so bad is the FPGA business, which obviously impacted AMD as well. But also Mobileye's guide down is really bad. That's like 3/4 of their guide. So yeah, Intel back to sucking. And that's what my entire piece was about. Intel sucks again. And AMD is not as good as it, nothing AMD can say is going to be good enough for the print. And of course, I don't know. AMD actually didn't have too bad of a day, all things considered. This is like literally the day after AMD's call.
Was there like, so is the FPGA was an excuse, or is that real? Like, what's driving that?
That's real. That's real, man. So remember, this is like in the taxonomy of cycles, right? FPGAs have been tight since 2020, and essentially 2020, 2021, 2022, there essentially has been almost no availability, extremely long lead times. 2023, still really long lead times, and finally they started to have the inventory correction. And when that happened, almost 3-4 years of expansion, no inventory correction, now it looks like there's way too much inventory in the channel. And so now we're having like these insane guide downs. We're talking 40-50% year over year. And it's just part of the cycle, right? Like every single sub-segment within semiconductor has already had this, and FPGAs just had it much later. Mm. So
I see.
I mean, it's also a function of networking. Remember, FPGA's biggest usage is mostly networking.
I see. All right. Dylan, what do you think about these Intel?
Yeah, kind of boring answer. Dylan.
What do you think about those earnings?
Well, I don't think you even read it.
I read it. Come on, man. I'm not that lazy.
I don't know, man. I thought you were on vacation mode.
I was only snowboarding and stuff this weekend. I read them, dude. Come on, I gotta read everything and
look at him. He's still got the dog in him, man. I thought the dogs all went to the pound.
Look, just because I was tweeting about AI generated videos during AMD's earnings call does not mean that I don't have the dog in me. It's just the dog has changed.
Is the dog an LLM now?
No. I read both of the calls. Okay, guys. Sheesh. And the TSMC call and the ASML call and the Glam call. Come on.
Look at you. You're still in it. I was going to say, I'm behind on every, I'm already behind on the calls, and I've been reading them nonstop. I actually have a stack about 3 inches high on my desk of all the calls I need to read.
Oh, you have a printer at your house?
Yes.
Tell me more about how you hate the environment.
Okay. One, screw you. I recycle these. And two, it's really hard, in my opinion, if you want to really retain information quickly, not being on the computer is a good idea. And the single way I can do that is by not, you know, by reading something on the computer, even though everything's accessed there. And so printing things out really does help me. That is probably my guiltiest pleasure. So yeah, I don't know.
And do you like highlight and circle and like?
No, dude. I like chew a transcript in like 15 minutes and like sick. We're in that next one. So very exciting. Very exciting transistor radio this week. What do you guys do? How do you consume your earnings transcripts?
Are we just going to end up just, this is really going to be one of those.
I just kind of open it up and scroll through. I read it. And then like, if there's an analyst I don't like, I just scroll past their question because they're usually an idiot question. Although it's sometimes, you know, the opposite.
Some of them are bad. I have to point out, whoever got the last call, I want to say it was an Intel, was like, oh, you guys are implementing high NA in your 18A, and everybody's like, we are not.
We like, announced that we weren't like a year ago. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, no, I know. Was, that's, yeah, I don't know. Kind of awkward if you ask
me. No, I saw that bit and I was like, and they're like, oh, wait, well, we will in 14A or on our next node, you know, we'll announce more at our Foundry Day. Will you be there, Doug? Will you be at the Foundry Day?
I will not be at the Foundry Day. I know. I know. I'm sorry, dude. It's too close.
I know. It's your birthday. It's your birthday. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I swear to God, if it wasn't my 30th birthday, I would definitely be going. I really want to go because Sam Altman's going to be there. Luminary speaker. That's what he's listed. And I'm also really excited. Like, I am actually really excited about the entire process. I think they've done what seems to be a legit, you know, so they're going to announce it 18A. They're going to go rah, rah. Things are going to look a little better. I'm really excited, but I'm kind of sad that I can't go. So.
What's fun is the industry analysts get to have a NDA briefing. And I said, no, because I'd like to still cover the stock and I'd still like to talk to investors. So I'm like, not going to get to go to that. So that's fun. But we'll be able to go to all the other sessions. So that'll be fun.
I just want to know who their customer is. That's all I care about at this point, right? Like, who cares about the rest of this? Who's the customer? Because that's what seems to be the most.
You think they'll come out? You think they'll like bring out like whether it's like Jensen or Andy or like whoever from like, you know, there, you know, whether it's Nvidia or Amazon or Google, right? Like bring out, you know, whoever they bring out. You think they're going to bring those people out and be like, ha ha, hoorah, like IBM, they're going to bring out IBM too, right? Like
that'd be okay, truly, because Pat, I think, because this is a culmination of Pat's 5 nodes in 4 years, right? If he was ever to do the one more thing, it'd be like having Jensen come out in the fucking leather jacket.
Telling me Sam Altman is going to go. He's going to speak with Pat on stage, and then he's going to do a one more thing with Jensen, and the whole crowd is going to
yes.
Sam.
Yeah.
And then Spiegel will like go on fire.
Yes. Yes. And then what's going to happen is Jensen is going to come out as you'll be holding one giant GPU. Okay. One, cause he's super jacked. It's above his head. He has a leather jacket. His sleeves are ripped off and he's carrying, a 70-pound GPU rack over his head. And he says, this is 18A. And he throws it on the ground. Then stage drops, dude.
Even if they did use 18A, they would not have a production chip back.
Just I know. I'm just joking. Dude, this is the dream, okay? I get to meme. He's obviously not I would be very surprised. But if there ever was to be the one more thing, I think it'll probably be the IFS thing. I mean, and here's the thing about IFS, and this is actually a good thing to talk about. IFS, for all the hype, they beat revenue this quarter based on a traditional packaging win, which is like so shit, dude. Like, not even advanced packaging, traditional packaging. For all the hype, for all the excitement, they truly don't really have much revenue. If
and then they announced in the call, right? And then they announced in the call that we are not doing traditional packaging for Foundry customers anymore, only advanced, which is like, okay.
But
I understand,
what was this
I understand
quarter?
The correct thing to do is just like,
yeah. Yeah, no, my understanding is within the revenue basis of IFS, it's only $50 million a quarter that is advanced, which is like nothing. A $200 million business in Intel annually, nothing. So they better like win stuff. And then also with the same context, they just did the UMC partnership as well. It's like, I don't know. For a foundry that wants to be a foundry, they're kind of off to a slow and shitty start, right?
It's so you mentioned that, right? Like it's $300 million, I think, in the most recent quarter, but like half of that is the IMS NanoFab, right? And then like another like 30% of that is traditional packaging, right? So it's only 20, and then there's like no wafers yet, and traditional packaging is like 50 million, yeah.
Yeah, no. Everything else, all of advanced, meaning whatever cost, and honestly, knowing what we know, it's probably the FPGA company that almost Achronix. I think they fab there, right? For all we know, it's just like a tiny customer, and that's it. That's the entirety of their revenue. Yeah. So what we're trying to say here is IFS ain't real. It ain't real at all. Like for all the hope, for all the fact that they have an Intel Foundry Services day, right? There is no revenue there, really under supporting the business that isn't advanced packaging. Essentially, this really is. You know how people are like, oh, when are we going to have an advanced packaging fab in the United States? It's like actually, that's Intel now. That's their new role in the industry, relegated to advanced packaging.
Dylan, are you as negative on this as Doug is?
Kind of so.
I think Intel will be, you know, come 2027, right? Intel will look decent. But in the middle, they're going to bleed more and more and more. Like, people are like, oh, revenue's coming back up and we're bottomed in the cycle. But it's like, oh, no. There's still a lot more pain to come, right? And I think there was like people who are wildly like assuming that the pain was done and that Intel is going to be competitive, you know, next year, and they're not going to be, in my opinion, right? Is the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think, I think that's like the problem, right? Like 2027 is so far from now, right? Like 2027, like in between 2027 and now is like, what is the rest of Intel? It's an x86 CPU maker. And like that's probably one of the worst businesses to be in if you're not winning in it, right? Like ARM's coming for you, AMD is going to kick the shit out of you. Like I think if Intel doesn't win process, they lose completely, right? Like I think AMD, there's a real chance AMD will have a competitive product, and they said this on AMD's call that even if Intel gets process back, they think they can do design better. And so they can like essentially deal with the negative competitive problems just because, hey, we can design a good chip and Intel can't.
Oh.
Thoughts and feelings about that.
Great.
No, I mean, I agree with you there, right? Like, yeah, I agree with you there, right? Like, AMD is better at design, right? I think, what was it, Pat, who had that, like, analogy? Like, we thought we were the best and because the rising tide kind of lifted the design boat, but then once the water came out, I was like, oh, shit, we don't even, our boat is leaking or something, right? I don't remember the exact phrase, but, like,
yeah.
That's exactly it, right? Like their design sucks. And this is in desktop, this is in PC, this is in laptop, this is in data center. On laptop and desktop, they at least can like eat the fact that they don't have margin stacking like TSMC, but in a higher margin business like data center where power consumption matters more and design is a bigger impact on sales, not just like how many cores can you give me at what price, right? Like, you know, so where the design difference is going to make a larger impact, you know, it sucks, right? It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And recently, and I mean, like, this might be getting into the details. Honestly, I could not understand it, but my understanding is like the ring bus on Meteor Lake kind of sucks. Like even for like what was supposed to be a comeback product, it like still kind of sucks. Like, it's just disappointing. Like, I don't know. Oh, Intel. Honestly, I think Intel will be like this bumbling child forever, probably. And I don't know. Maybe they get their foundry together in like 2027, and by then, like, you know, then the stock and the company can start to go up. But like, after underperforming the S&P 500 for, or like, underperforming all the other companies for like a long time, which is probably what's going to happen, right? Like, tell me a good reason why an x86 CPU fabless company deserves to like that loses share deserves to trade for like a meaningful multiple. I don't know.
Well, all right then.
Okay, we have to have something more exciting than this. John, what are you excited about in the semiconductor space, other than coming to visiting the semiconductor design mecca? Because I know you live in the semiconductor production mecca, but now you're going to come to the other side of the world, where all the chips are designed. What are you stoked about?
Been hearing a lot. I'm doing a video. I did a video a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's coming out next week, but it's about neuromorphic AI, and been thinking a lot about kind of these weird memories that sort of don't really have linear outputs, and they kind of been used for analog AI calculation. And if maybe if I have the time someday, right now I'm in a chaotic mood place, but like maybe I can sit down and look a little more on like the science of analog AI computation. But I've been hearing a lot of people talking about neuromorphic AI chips and what they, and I don't really necessarily feel like I have a good grasp over how they work yet, how they might work. I think it's, I can see the physics behind it, but I can't quite see how it, what's the benefits necessary other than power consumption. Doug and Dylan, you have any thoughts?
This is a question for the AI master,
Yeah,
Dylan.
put that to Dylan.
I'm gonna be honest. I kind of zoned out because you didn't have that energy in you. You know, I want that energy when you talk.
He asked about what the hell is neuromorphic computing?
It's crap that people peddle, but it's not gonna work anytime soon.
It's
There you go. There you go, John. You should delete the video. Actually,
No,
don't
no,
delete
no,
the
no.
video.
It's
I want to look.
interesting technique, right? Like, it makes more sense. It's more like a brain. But like, whatever. That's not, don't bet against von Neumann architectures, you scrub.
Silicon has a lot
Yeah,
of
man. We've been trying to
benefits.
do post von.
I don't know if it's.
We've been trying to do post von Neumann, and he's still winning,
He's
dude.
still winning.
Sorry, you can keep going.
Yeah. I think the
Yeah. Silicon
problem.
has a lot of benefits.
Yeah. I think silicon has a lot of benefits, especially with digital. I think Dylan is sort of right, but I've always felt like. I mean, neuromorphic does get a lot of clicks. For some reason, it's very strange. I think a lot of people are very attracted to this exotic new thing.
You know what's you know what gets a lot of clicks and gets people attracted?
What?
Ozempic.
Yeah, where's your
It's
Ozempic
over,
piece?
man.
We've been waiting for so
Acquired
long.
did their piece on Ozempic, and I don't feel like I can beat that. So I threw it out. I threw it out.
Okay, threw in the towel. It's okay, dude. You we know
You could do a
you can get
video
them
about the
next time.
negative effects of Ozempic.
Ooh, maybe.
The full
Full
circle.
circle. Go full negative.
I don't
Because
know.
everyone, I think that's, that, or you should do a video about Stanleys and Yetis and all these like cups that are getting people going crazy.
Oh, do you actually? I actually know quite a bit about this.
Really? Tell me.
Tell
I
us,
love.
enlighten us, Mr. O-Trend Master.
Okay, so the original, by the way, this is once again, this is now going to be a big skew. So Helen of Troy owns Hydro Flask, and okay. So my theory is that for some reason, stainless steel vacuum, water bottle, every like 5 years takes control of the mind of the youth and like ruins them, and then creates a
Is it the
speculative
lead
curve.
in them? Is it because the lead?
Maybe because it's the lead. Actually, the lead is underneath the cooler. You have to literally like break it open for the lead. That's like a completely overdone thing on the Stanley thing. Because there's actually, if you think about it, there's actually a history of this. Remember, because in the beginning there was Yeti.
Yes.
Yeti was the first, okay, for sure. Do not forget Yeti. Remember Yeti cups? They first came out. Everyone's like, "Oh my God, Yeti! It's bear proof." All that kind of shit. That really blew up in, let's say, like 2017 kind of era.
Yeah.
And then Hydro Flask really blew up during, and I think this is 2019, so maybe it's every 3 years is like kind of the rule. But 2019 Hydro Flask blew up on TikTok, and what what happened is there's this meme called Visco Girls, and Visco Girls like did all these memes or whatever, and it was like tisk tisk, and then they love their Hydro Flask. And so I remember, because once upon a time, you know, poor little me old hedge fund analyst was like going to Dick's Sporting Goods and like seeing if there was any Hydro Flask, and there weren't any Hydro Flasks on any shelves anywhere in the entire DFW Metroplex. I went to six different shops, and literally in one of them there was a dad in it, and he's like, my daughter really wants one of these, and so I'm trying to buy them. Completely sold out. So example of another.
Why were you trying to buy one though?
Because no, whoa. One, I have to buy one for the memes, but number two, I had to see if I could buy one to see if this revenue would be. And the answer was it did. Helena Troy had a really wonderful run around that time, I think. Yeah, a few years ago. Back and now Helena Troy is the stock, I think, is like absolutely in the shitter, mostly because now we're coming to the final player here, Stanley Cups. So I have once again another theory on Stanley Cups, because I think it's a pretty good one. I think the reason why Stanley Cups are winning right now is there's like, it's kind of vintage, kind of outdoors. And then plus, obviously, TikTok is making this shit go crazy. So now, once again, we have the third. And so I think every 3 to 5 years, there's going to be another trend. I don't know. Maybe not no hard prediction there, but it does seem like every few years, there's just like this speculative fervor on freaking stainless steel cups.
That's interesting. I should do a video about that.
But
the cycle of cups.
Different demographic. No.
Well, to be clear, the last cycle of cups, like the Hydro Flask cup girlies, are still probably the Stanley Cup girlies.
But it feels like Yeti was like dudes, right? And then
yes,
and then
Yeti was dudes.
Visco was like teenage girls.
Yeah, but
Stanley seems more like boomer moms.
That's true. Maybe I'm wrong. It's the boomer. It's the so what that leaves many different. There's like a Gen X males category. Gen X. I don't know. The thing is though, there's like a 20-year-old girl who got arrested for like stealing 60 Stanley Cups. Like, it seems like it's just become a thing. It like maybe what's happened, and this is truly the problem, is like the internet has created this like weird artificial scarcity thing, and it can happen to physical goods, but at the internet scale. And so every few years you have some random company blowing up, and it's like, oh, everyone has to have it, and then like there's essentially a run on it. Like, for example, toilet paper. Buddy, we never ran out of toilet paper during COVID.
Yeah,
like that was a
speak for yourself.
That was an inventory cycle. That wasn't that
I'm
was like
still,
a
I'm still reeling from the loss of toilet paper.
And you know what we didn't, and actually, ready for this? We're bringing this all the way full circle. We also didn't run out of chips, okay? It was actually just in inventories. I'm just kidding. honestly, COVID was great. COVID was great for semiconductors. I feel like that was truly the defining moment that made it like, before 2020, semiconductors were like, kind of cool. Only me and Dylan were obsessed with it. No one else gave a shit. All my friends on Twitter were like, dude, did you lose your mind? Why do you care so much about semiconductors? And I was like, no, dude, this is for real. After 2020, everyone's like, semiconductors, important.
Whoa, Doug,
cool.
Doug, let's be real, right? Okay.
Okay, that's
you
true.
You would be in like 2019, like end of 2019, maybe beginning of 2020. Maybe you were freaking out about them a little bit earlier, right? I think you said like 2017, you liked Micron a lot or something.
2020. Okay, so in the winter of 2018, I tried to get my old boss to buy ASML because the stock was down a crap ton. You owned SemiCap, but SemiCap was down a crap ton. I did a ton of research and was like, oh my God, these are the best businesses of all time. And that was like, and that to me was like my awakening moment, because it's true. They are the best businesses of all time. Like, we have to use them. There's no competition. They go up every like SemiCap's an amazing business/business model. The things they do is amazing. And that's like what pilled me. And then from there, as you know, it takes a few years for you to figure out anything. I mean, remember, dude, you're an insurance guru back then, man. You're an insurance salesman, you know? Now look at you.
Not sales, not sales.
I just I'm yanking your chain. I would love to see Dylan as an insurance salesman. That's why I say that.
I want to see him sell cups.
2013, I started moderating forms, okay? That's the
That's the beginning.
Yeah, that's the beginning. 2013, moderating, or 12, sorry, 12, moderating forums about phones and gaming computers and shit. Yeah.
All right. This conversation has gone way off the rails. Do you have any like chip stuff we were going to talk about?
Okay,
AMD anything? MI300.
What kind of container do you drink water out of on a daily basis?
Oh my god.
Dude, so actually, this is where it begs the question. What if we dropped merch and what if we made a semiconductor focused stainless steel Stanley Cup? And it had the logos of all the semiconductor companies on it. And on top, it had a big picture of John's face.
Could we legally sell them with all the companies' logos? Probably. I think we just have to put chips on them and not put companies' logos.
That's fair.
All three.
I was just hoping, because that would be like the mega powerful chip. Hey, you're right. This episode has gotten off topic. We've talked a little about Intel, a little about ASML. I don't think there's anything else to talk about. How about we talk about AMD before we go? Because I think that's my favorite. I don't know. I love the cope on that earnings call. AMD has kind of reached a fever point, in my opinion.
In the span of 3 months, right? In the span of 3 months, estimates for MI300 went from, you know, below $1 billion for this year. And we made a post, I think, saying it was going to be three and a half in November. And then since then, you know, it went from like, we were way, way, way ahead of everyone on that to like, holy crap, people are calling me. And I literally had a call last week where someone argued with me that it's $8 billion for like 45 minutes. And I'm like, no, it's not, dude. They don't even have supply for $8 billion. They have supply for like seven, six and a half, right? Maybe they can get more later this year, but for now, they only have supply for seven or six and a half. I think they can sell maybe five and a half, six of that, right? Right now, but maybe they can extend the sales, right? It depends on when NVIDIA can ship their next gen, right? And that's like kind of your point. And they're like, no, it's $8 billion. You're wrong. And he literally argued with me for that long. And then the call comes around and I don't know, it was just so weird.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like weird because of how much of a speculative fervor it's become. So just for context, since October 31st to now, it's up 70%, obviously down a little bit on earnings. But here's the thing is like, I mean, they're good chips, man. But like, I don't know why. I think there's just like a lot of AMD fanboyism from the Zen turnaround that has like kind of infiltrated the popular retail speculator's mind. And it's like, and then on top of that, like MI300 estimates, everyone's like, oh my God, has to go up. But yeah, you're right. There wasn't a supply chain. And also like, you know, this MI300 ramp has to be like really now weighted because if like Q4 is probably when B100 ships. We'll see, right? Maybe it begins to have some volume or something like that, right? Like it's going to take some time, but like B100 will probably kick the shit out of it. So it's just like this weird, I don't know. I think it's another example of DigiTimes fucking up everyone. But at the same time, it's just like, guys, get your shit together. What are we doing here? And so into the print, my guess is that they're going to double. So from 2 to 4, and anything less than that was going to be disappointing. And it was less than that. So it was a little disappointing. And that's just kind of where we are. Guys, semiconductor supply chains move quickly, but it can't move like that quickly. Fair.
Seems fair.
Yep. I agree. And the fever pitch went crazy. But you know, in the end, you know, the stock's not down that much because what went down was like gaming, and it's like who cares about that? And like what went down was FPGA, which is like everyone knew that already.
No one knew the gaming was going to go down.
That's fair. On the illegal callbacks, AMD only told people that embedded was going to be shit last quarter. They didn't tell people that gaming was going to be shit.
Yeah, and pretty much my understanding is gaming was down like 30% Q over Q. Pretty bad. Everyone knew FPGA was going to be horrible. And I was like, actually, I think it was a little better than I feared. But gaming just shit the bed out of nowhere.
Going back to the rabid fanboys, my favorite thing is that like there's this one random German e-tailer who always publishes their like sales
market share, like, yeah,
everything, right? And then like there's this guy who like gets all that data, puts it together, makes market share, and is like, look, AMD's gaining market share. And without fail, every fucking time, they did not gain market share.
Yeah, because it's on an extremely, like, the mindfactory.de or whatever. It's an extremely small website, right? Like, we're talking, like...
Yeah, it's DIY only, so it does not include laptop, does not include pre-built. It is German, so, you know, they don't buy much anyways because they're poor. And then it's like where is NVIDIA's mind share?
Can we not
like,
shit on Germany
every time?
These fucking
streamers with 4090s. Yeah, these fucking streamers with 4090s, right? Like, those are the ones that are convincing, like, these kids or these adults to buy 4090s, right?
Jeez. Sorry, I just... Damn, I did not see that one coming, Dylan. You gotta warn us beforehand. But yeah, every single time they always say, hey, they're gaining share, and it's like, relax. Relax, guys. And look, AMD's done an amazing job, but I think there is... And this is, like, this is some philosophy here, okay? A problem is when you fall in love with something for the first time and it makes you fall in love with something like greater than it. Cause like truly a lot of like probably the young generation who's like into semiconductors has been AMD fans since like the late teens, right? Have been rooting for the Lisa Su comeback, which completely happened. And there is like definitely, and like obviously great call, wonderful job guys. Like I was with you, probably should have been more bullish, but like, I think it like creates a bias that overhangs you for the rest of your life. Just like how Intel people like an Intel fan who followed Intel in the like the late 90s was probably like, well, Intel can never lose. That same, you have to like be a little flexible and not let whatever you learned about in the very beginning color like rose color your glasses forever, because I think that that's like sometimes when you look at stuff like this, I do think that that happens now, especially with AMD. AMD has like a very rabid, hardcore fan base at its core. And like the thought of Intel doing anything good, they're like, you're lying. I'm going to beat you up. You're completely fucking wrong. And you're like, dude, relax. I'm just trying to like, you know, this is just some analysis. And they're like, no, this is my life. Agree or disagree on the AMD fanboys?
No, I think they're much more rabid about NVIDIA AMD than they are Intel AMD. Like,
yes,
like Intel they were more rabid about initially because Intel was so strong, but Intel's just been shit on and shit on and shit on.
Yeah.
They've kind of been taken down a peg and people feel bad for them now. Whereas NVIDIA, yes, the hatred just continues to climb and climb and climb. I mean, like I believe it's like, I think like last year there were probably 20 articles where people were like, Jensen Huang does not care about gamers. In fact, there was a Computex. I remember there was like a Q&A thing, and my dumb ass gets up and I'm like, hey, Jensen, what about this whole like, you know, this Ethernet product you're launching, but you don't have an InfiniBand product and your Ethernet product's faster. Like, what's up, bro? Like, you know, I there, I know they're different teams. Are you guys deprioritizing one? Is your InfiniBand team suck? Like, what's up? Right. I didn't say it like that, but you know, And he gives a really good answer. The next person literally got up and asked – no, the next person was Pat from Serve the Home, and he had a really good question. But then the person after that, which Jensen did not give a good answer to, the person after that was like some gaming website, and he's like, yo, so do you care about gamers or only AI? And it was great. It was great. Like people were just like hate NVIDIA so much for that reason, right?
Buddy, I would care about just about AI. I wouldn't care about gamers. Like one is – the vast minority, right? Like who cares? It's like 10 billion a year. Who cares? Like,
yeah, but the funny thing is like Jensen gave a really good answer, which was like, of course we care about gamers because we're bringing AI to gamers, right? And it's going to make your gaming better, blah, 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 blah. And then like, I remember immediately after, like within an hour, I saw some articles on Twitter that were like, Jensen Huang does not care about gamers. I'm like, what? Yes, but like, calm down. Oh, you know, it's going to be even funnier is this annual release cycle that NVIDIA is doing. Just so people know, like their gaming lineup is like slightly delayed because of that, right? Like they did reshuffle engineers, like people who worked on the gaming chips, some of them on bring up on design, some of them are focused on the next generation X/R100 now, right? They're, you know, slight delay so we can get that next chip out within a year of, you know, B100, right? And it's like that narrative hasn't come to gamers yet, but I wonder if it will and how much it'll piss them off.
What do you think is worse, Tesla or AMD?
The thing is, guys, I don't think Tesla. Tesla for sure.
That's not even a question.
That's not even a question. Yeah. Dude, like some people, God, like people have tattoos of Tesla, man. I don't think people have, Jesus. What was it? My instant vitriol, like literally forgot what I was going to say. Dude, why? Okay. So why do gamers pretend like they're a protected class? Like, I don't get, like, it's like, would you think of the gamers? Like, that's how it comes. I'm like, why do I have to think? Like, I like playing video games too, but this isn't like, I don't know. It's just like this, like, there is this, like, this really weird meme that's like, well, no, you have to, like, gamers first, the consumer first. Competition's good for the gamers, and we need better video games. And I'm like, what do we need, like, that much better video games? I don't know. Just throwing these questions out here. And I'm probably gonna be canceled for this. This is a real chance to be canceled. Unlike Dylan's fire takes. You know, I think the gamers are going
to
come for me.
I might have to edit this out,
dude,
just to protect
your guarantee
life.
You they do not listen to a podcast.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I know. No one fucking listens to that, to this, especially. But you know what I'm saying? Like, why are gamers a protected class? Could someone explain this to me? Because, like, why does Jensen have to care about the gamers? Why? It's the weirdest concept of YouTube, like, tech YouTube of all time. The gamers must be cherished.
They're just loud. They're loud and proud, and they like to, they're very... They're the Reddit class. They
love to game.
Yeah, we need a.
They are.
We need to ask Dylan for his opinion.
They are the Reddit.
on protected classes.
No, don't say that.
Oh my
gamers.
God! Oh my God!
But gamers are a protected class. They're oppressed.
Okay. Yeah, they're.
They're kind of like.
Dude, they've had all their companies taken from them.
No. They're like the panda. Like, everyone thinks we're endangered, but they're not. And like, we're lobbying people. Certain powers are lobbying to keep them.
Dude, if you really think about it, like desktop PC gamers are in for constant L's, right? Like first it was mobile gaming, which by the way, iOS gaming makes more revenue than PC gaming and console gaming, right? And as does Android gaming, even, right? And Android users like myself are poor and don't even buy anything. Right. So it's like, holy crap. And even we give them more money than freaking, give gaming companies. Right. So when you look at like, what did Blizzard and Activision focus on for a few years? And what did EA focus on for a few years? And like,
oh,
what is Tencent?
I know what
killing
you're trying to
gaming
do.
For,
I know
right?
what you're
like,
trying to do.
PC gamers.
You can't. You,
what am I trying to
do? You're just reversing the narrative. All right. This.
They're an oppressed class, dude. They're like they've been stomped
Let's
on.
Let's keep
whole
oppressing
lives,
them
dude.
A little bit longer.
Like
I think we are. I think we're done for today.
Yeah, turn the bolts a little tighter, baby. No, but then their favorite companies, NVIDIA and AMD, which are gaming, or at least ATI, were gaming companies at the heart, right? And then it's like, oh wait, I don't care about gaming anymore, right? Like, and
least.
And,
Lisa has abandoned me. It's like the screaming protester, and it's Lisa Stu and the
camera. Oh no, and Jensen. Jensen's worse, yeah. Though, right? Like
Jensen never cared.
Actually, AMD did the same thing, actually, now that I think about it, where they diverted resources away from consumer gaming GPUs and moved them to the data center side. For MI400. But you know, that's a different story altogether.
Yeah, I know, but why wouldn't they? Like, of course they have to. Like, this is how this shit works. But I just think it's very funny. Yeah, I mean, like, respectfully, they're running a business, not making your video games better. And right now, in the past, making your video games better was a much better business model. But right now, that's not a very good business model. And also, like, I don't know, man. We like the cutting edge. Don't we need like better monitors at this point to make better gaming stuff? Like,
dude, the monitors now are getting crazy. They're really high refresh rate, really high resolution OLED. Like monitor. One of the things that people don't appreciate about COVID is it caused demand for monitors and TVs to skyrocket and then tank. Right, which immediately caused everyone like during the tanking, it was like, well, how the fuck do we do this? Right, it's like, well, we transition to lower yield, higher quality panels and try and sell those. Right, and then that's been pretty successful. And so like a $500 shit TV is actually fucking good now, right? Like compared to just a few years ago. And likewise, monitors have gotten a lot better. Like a $500 monitor is a lot better now. If you go to the peak echelons of like, hey, $2,000, $3,000 TV. $1,000 monitor, like they're a lot better now, but like the average Joe monitor has gotten like insanely better. And same applies to laptops too, right? Like 1080p IPS panels are in every low end laptop now, right? Whereas, you know, just a few years ago, they were not in every laptop. And in fact, you had to go pretty decent range to get a 1080p IPS panel.
Weirdly enough, I'm not really surprised by that, honestly, because I just feel like that's always been the story with most of like monitors in general. It's like, yeah, the cost downs have always been insane.
And then, of course, it's
still doing Moore's Law, right? Like in terms of like ability to ship pixel density.
And guess whose tools make those? Semicap, baby.
Yeah, Applied Materials, dude. Well, my favorite part is that
screen. What's that other? Ibarra, I believe, is the other Japanese.
Ibarra. Well, you know. By the way, this is some good meme lore. When we're gonna leave, okay. And also, I swear this is our final thing. And you know what? This episode did heat up. You have to get only the real ones. Got here. What's his face? Who's the CEO of Applied Materials?
Gary
Dickerson. Okay, so Gary Dickerson made this giant bet in like late 2016, 2017. They did this investor day, and they're like, "By the way, display is the future. There's going to be a display in your car. There's going to be a display everywhere." And this is when they're like putting fucking TVs into the back of the headsets. They're like, "We're gonna have displays everywhere. Every surface is going to be a display." And that's the reason why Applied Materials is going to have this like really awesome display semicap business. Obviously, that turned out to be a very shitty bet. So
if that business was standalone, it would still trade like very positively, right? Like
I think it would be a very good business.
I would own that business because it's cash flow printer. And they're just going to buy back with it. And there's even less R&D intensity for that business, I think they've commented once, than for semicap. So it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, but I think the growth prospects of it just have never turned out even remotely the same.
You know what growth is? It's EPS, baby. And if I can buy back my shares every year, then that's growth.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what else to say, man. I guess a display on every eyeball. We can talk about that maybe next time.
We can put them on and
I was gonna say, John, we can all get Apple Vision Pros.
Oh yeah, yeah, we should do that.
We can do the podcast in the metaverse. This could become the first metaverse podcast. Think about that.
Can't wait to record all of us our terrible personas.
Can I be poor and buy the Meta Ray-Bans instead?
Yeah, well, no.
You don't need glasses
anymore. I need you to wear the Meta Ray-Bans you need to wear Meta Ray-Bans inside of your...
You know, that's why I'm getting LASIK, right? Is because of all the AR stuff. Like, it's not convenient to have that stuff and glasses.
Dude, I actually, honestly, you want to, like, who are you using, dude? I kind of want to do it as well. Sorry, this is probably where the episode ends. This is actually gone...
It's actually a Zeiss developed to Zeiss. That's a semi company. Hold on, we can continue this conversation.
Oh my god, it's all semiconductors at the end of the day. It's all dope silicon at the end of the day.
So there's a special type of procedure. So LASIK, right? They basically use a laser and cut an incision in your eye and go on your day. And of course, this has been massively reducing in cost over time, right? But now Zeiss came out with this technology called Smile, and the incision is way, way, way smaller. Complete like laser surgery. You know, the complications are less. Your eyes don't get dry anymore nearly as much, right? It's much, much smaller. The incision and it's much better.
Do you still get
it's
the
made
halos?
By Zeiss, right? There's a laser that Zeiss makes and the optics Zeiss makes. It's fucking badass.
Do you still get the halos, like the nighttime halos?
No. It's a lot less.
Interesting. I have those all the time. It's terrible. Can't drive that way.
Did you get LASIK?
I got PRK.
What is that?
Oh, it's the older version where they don't cut an incision. They basically grind down your eye. I don't know why we're talking about this, but like they grind down your eye and then they send the laser through that. So it has to grow back. It's technically, I guess it's more structurally.
You hear this guy? He did CMP instead of litho. What a loser.
That's the worst joke ever that I understand. What the fuck, man?
Not? Oh my god.
Bro, I think our brains are melting.
I need to go get
That was a good
breakfast.
one, Dylan. That was really funny. That was
That was
really
good.
good, Dylan. That was like one of the best jokes I've heard from you in a long time. That was good, man. Okay, we're gonna leave on the CMP overlook.
And make sure you subscribe to John's Patreon so next time you can afford a $250 million litho tool instead of, you know, some
exactly.
$20 million CMP tool.
A 500K CMP tool out of freaking China, dude. No tolerance and creates particle contamination everywhere.
Oh,
so.
My God.
Anyways, it's nice talking to you guys. Well, this is the end of Transistor Radio. I'm Doug.
I'm John.
I'm Dylan.